says emergency workers were called to Weaver's home yesterday afternoon. He says it appears Weaver collapsed while cleaning the pool. She was found in the water and holding a cleaning tool. He says a friend was due to visit yesterday afternoon and found Weaver in the pool. An autopsy is planned. A former Eli Lilly and Company chairman and a top Indiana Pacers executive has been named to the Indiana University Board of Trustees. Governor Mike Pence's office announced today he's appointed retired Lilly executive Randall Tobias and Pacers Sports and Entertainment President Jim Morris to three-year terms on the IU board. Pence also reappointed Lilly Chief Financial Officer Derica Rice to the board. I'm Jeff Bosser, Illinois Public Media News.
WILL programs are made possible by Hendrick House, providing housing and food service to University of Illinois students for 64 years. Hendrick House works to ensure a quiet environment for study and relaxation. More information is available at 365-8000 or at hendrickhouse.com.
It's 12:38. Mostly sunny skies and south winds prevailed across central and southeast Illinois today through the morning hours. Temperatures across the area at 10 were in the mid-70s to low 80s. They range from 75 down at Paris to 83 at Lincoln. High pressure over the Great Lakes will slowly move eastward today. As southerly winds set up behind this high, this will result in a gradual trend of warmer and more humid weather over the Midwest. A few thunderstorms will be possible along and west of the Mississippi River through tomorrow, with chances spreading into northern Illinois by tomorrow night. They continue near the Great Lakes into the start of the weekend. High temperatures today will range from the upper 70s across northern Wisconsin to near 90 degrees across the Ohio River Valley. Low temperatures tonight, they'll range from the low 60s in northern and eastern Wisconsin to the low 70s in western Missouri. Mostly sunny skies this afternoon, the high 88 degrees. Mostly clear tonight with a low around 65. Mostly sunny tomorrow, the high near 90 degrees. And winds up to 15 miles an hour. Partly cloudy for Friday night with a low around 70. Mostly sunny Saturday, the high 90 degrees. Saturday evening, partly cloudy skies, the low 72. Mostly sunny Sunday, again a high around 90. Partly cloudy Sunday night with a low of 71. Mostly sunny on Monday, the high near 90 degrees. Temperatures around the area right now, we've got 85 at Danville. Over in Bloomington, 85 degrees, 83 in Bloomington. And right now on Friends Plaza, it's 84 degrees.
WILL programs are made possible by the Illinois Shakespeare Festival, presenting Shakespeare's Comedy of Errors and Macbeth, plus Failure, a Love Story by Philip Dawkins from July 6th through August 10th at Ewing Manor in Bloomington. Ticket information is available at thefestival.org or 309-438-2535.
This is the Afternoon Magazine. I'm Jeff Bosser. It's 12:40. Illinois General Assembly's one-day special session on pensions came and went yesterday. Governor Pat Quinn had initially demanded lawmakers send him legislation to overhaul the state's underfunded pension systems, but in the end, he settled for a special committee. The bipartisan group of legislators is supposed to find a compromise among some very different ideas about how to solve the pension puzzle. Brian Mackey has more on yesterday's events and how likely it is the committee will succeed.
When Quinn announced the special session more than 2 weeks ago, he repeatedly said it was imperative that lawmakers do their job and send him pension legislation. He said he'd work hard toward that goal.
I intend to push the legislature to do its job night and day between now and the 19th of this month when we resume action.
Last month, the General Assembly had two major plans to deal with the nearly $100 billion in long-term pension liabilities. One passed the Senate, the other the House, and there they sat. The Chicago Democrats who lead each chamber have significantly different views on their counterpart's plan. Senate President John Cullerton says the House proposal is likely to be thrown out by the courts. House Speaker Mike Madigan says the Senate plan doesn't save nearly enough money. It was never clear how Quinn's one-day special session would help bridge that divide, and in the days before lawmakers returned to Springfield, he dusted off an old legislative maneuver, the conference committee. When the House finally met, the action was over in a matter of seconds.
You've all heard the lady's motion. Those in favor say aye. Those opposed say no. The ayes have it. The motion is adopted.
The committee comprises five senators and five members of the House, with a 6-4 Democratic majority. Conference committees used to be much more common, but there hasn't been one in years. University of Illinois Springfield professor Charlie Wheeler sees it as something of a stunt.
I do a column for Illinois Issues every month.
Wheeler's been writing about state politics for decades.
And sometimes I sit here at the computer screen and I'm stuck. I can't think of a good way to get into the subject. I can't think of the lead.
So maybe he looks for inspiration.
I might say, hey, instead of trying to do it on the computer, why don't I haul down the old typewriter that sits on top of a file cabinet and do it on a manual typewriter? And to me, that's the same difference here.
In other words, whether through garden variety legislative meetings that happen all the time, or by reaching up on the old filing cabinet and dusting off the conference committee, it's all about finding compromise. Which gets back to what Wheeler thinks is the real reason Quinn and the legislative leaders are forming this committee.
It's a way to make it look like something really substantive and important is happening, when in fact it's not.
That view is shared by Tom Cross, the House Republican leader. He was asked what a conference committee could get done that the legislative leaders couldn't do themselves.
It's a fair question. I think that today was more of a face-saving move for folks.
Cross says the key is what happens in the next few weeks.
Well, are we going to see a conference committee that's meeting a group meeting every day, or is it kind of just going through the motions and going nowhere? And that's time will tell on that, I don't control that.
Representative Elaine Neckritz from Northbrook is more optimistic. She's one of three House Democrats appointed to the conference committee. She says May 31st, the last day of regular session, was a turning point. Both the House and Senate thought there would be enough pressure to force the other to knuckle under and pass their pension plan.
When that didn't happen, I think we both have now taken a step back and said, all right, we've got to find a way to get through this. And I feel it's to me like there's a real commitment to do that.
Seven of the 10 men and women on the committee are on record as favoring the Speaker's pension plan. It remains to be seen how much either side will be willing to move. For his part, Governor Quinn is impatient. He set yet another deadline for the legislature to get something to his desk, July 9th, less than 3 weeks away. But Cullerton, the Senate president, says there's a problem with rushing. Because it's after May 31st, the state constitution says any legislation passed with just a simple majority would have a delayed effective date.
So as a practical matter, I think this is important. As much as we'd like to solve this as soon as possible, no bill we would pass would take effect until June of next year.
After the hoopla of a special session, Governor Quinn declaring victory, and both optimistic and pessimistic predictions about the conference committee, the truth is, Illinois is no closer to solving its pension problem than it was before the special session. And no one really knows if that's about to change. I'm Brian Mackey.
It's 12:45. Next month, the original Star Wars movie is being re-released dubbed in Navajo. It's the first time a major motion picture will be translated into a North American tribal language. The project will help Navajo families who want to learn and preserve their native language. From member station KUNM in Albuquerque, Christine Trudeau reports.
When Dave Nezzi met his future wife, Amanda, they quickly fell in love over a galaxy far, far away.
I think that was one of the first things that bonded Dave and I together was our love for Star Wars, and our children have also caught the Star Wars bug.
The family lives in Albuquerque, and one of the biggest struggles they've come up against living off the reservation is teaching their kids Dave's native Navajo language.
Rosetta Stone has something. There's an app on the iPad, and having alternatives is what we need. Having more resources available will help us teach the language to more people.
Enter Star Wars.
There are definitely Star Wars nerds out there who can repeat that movie verbatim, and they speak no Navajo.
That's Manuelito Wheeler, director of the Navajo Nation Museum and the muscle behind the Star Wars translation project.
And so when they're watching this and it's in Navajo, it's them learning Navajo.
So he approached both the Navajo Nation and Lucasfilm, and the project went into hyperdrive.
This was an idea that I felt was a way to promote our culture, promote our language, a way to save our language.
But translating the film into Navajo was no easy feat. When dubbing a film into another language, syncing the translation with the character's lip movement is crucial to the pace of the film. Wheeler's wife, Jennifer, is a professor of English at the University of New Mexico in Gallup and is one of the translators working on the project. She gives this example of a translation problem. Think about how you'd say computer in Navajo.
You know, that's quite long.
Now imagine how you'd get across the concept of a droid. It's metal, It moves around, and it's a computer.
R2-D2 would be the short metal thing that's alive.
So the translation for droid? That won't be revealed until the premiere. In some ways, though, the syncing process might be somewhat easier for Star Wars because characters like Darth Vader deliver their lines behind a mask. Beyond the fun of translating phrases like Death Star, Jennifer Wheeler says the whole project demonstrates that the Navajo language is still alive.
This will be one historic event that will celebrate and recognize the fact that we're just part of society here in this Western society, in this country. But who we are as Navajo people living in this century, we really need to celebrate.
Do you want TV?
Do you want to watch Star Wars?
Yeah.
David, Amanda, Nezzy, and their kids are looking forward to sitting down to watch Star Wars in Navajo.
I want to hear what Millennium Falcon is in Navajo. I'm very curious. And our daughter, she'll be able to speak Navajo. She'll understand who she is. And what more of a beautiful way to do that than put it in Star Wars?
Absolutely.
The Nezzys are traveling to Window Rock, Arizona for the premiere, which is taking place as part of the Navajo Nation Fair. At this time, Lucasfilm has no plans for a wider theatrical release or DVD version of Star Wars in Navajo. For NPR News, I'm Christine Trudeau in Albuquerque.
Support for WILL comes from Stuart Peterson, Pioneer Seeds, Standard Grain, Cornerstone Building Products, and Risk Management Commodities. Thanks to these businesses for their support of WILL agricultural programs.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday, June 20th, 2013. On this date in 1837, the 18-year-old Alexandrina Victoria became Queen of England. Drina, as she was known to her family, had a fairly quiet childhood. She kept a diary, so we know a lot about her private life. She was a lively and sometimes mischievous child, and she was well-educated, but her mother was overprotective and kept her isolated at Kensington Palace in London. When she was born, she was fifth in line for the throne, behind a number of uncles and her father, and no one expected her to become a monarch. But one by one, her uncles and their heirs died, and by 1830, she was heiress presumptive, next in line for the crown. Dawn, hours of June 20th, 1837, the news came that her uncle, King William IV, died, and now she was queen. Her first demand was that she be given a room of her own and stop having to share one with her mother. She remains Britain's longest ruling monarch, having reigned for 63 years, 7 months, and 2 days. On this date in 1840, Samuel Morse received a patent for his system known as Morse code. During a demonstration of one of his early telegraph machines, he met a young mechanical engineer named Alfred Vail, who became Morse's assistant. Morse had an idea that the electrical current sent over a wire could be used to move a pencil along a moving strip of paper, but Vail simplified it by suggesting a cheaper and more practical alternative, an arm that would bounce up and down, tapping out messages. But Morse was the better known of the two inventors, and it was his name on the patents, and that's why they call it Morse code and not Vail code. It's the birthday of American playwright Lillian Hellman, born in New Orleans in 1905. She wrote The Children's Hour at the age of 26. It premiered on Broadway, a play about a pompous boarding school student who damaged the reputations of two school directors by accusing them of having a lesbian relationship. When it was shunned by the Pulitzer Prize Committee because of its content, critics formed the New York Drama Critics Circle Award as a way to honor it. And it's the birthday of poet Paul Muldoon, born in Portadown, Ireland, in 1951. His father dug ditches for a living and could barely read or write. The only book his family owned was the Junior World Encyclopedia, and so it became Paul Muldoon's favorite book. He began to write poems in grade school as a way of getting out of one of his teacher's weekly essay assignments. After college, Muldoon began to publish books of poetry, supported himself by working as a TV producer for the BBC. He says that his influences are John Donne, Robert Frost, William Butler Yeats, and rock and roll. He is now a professor at Princeton University and the author of many collections of poetry, including Moist Sand and Gravel, which won the Pulitzer Prize. And here's a poem by Paul Muldoon, The Sonogram. Only a few weeks ago, the sonogram of Jean's womb resembled nothing so much as a satellite map of Ireland. Now, the image is so well defined, they can make out not only a hand, but a thumb.